Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my three decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba. Welcome to episode 52 on the Lean 911 podcast, and I am very happy to have a new colleague and friend of mine, Jerry Wright, appear on the show today. He's going to talk about, you heard about four-letter words, but we're going to talk about a three-letter word, Jerry. It's called MRP, and there's a lot of controversy even today. I don't know, Jerry. Was MRP, Ollie White did that in what, 1970s maybe?
1964. Ollie did it in 83, but Orlicky started it in 1964.
Orlicky did it in 64. So this has been around since Custer was a private, right? I mean, come on. I mean, Kennedy was just assassinated a year earlier. So it's like, exactly. That's how long we're talking about MRP. And this thing has legs and it lasts forever. Well, anyway, I came across Jerry. He wrote this book and sent me a copy called The Insanity Trap. And we're going to talk more about that book. But it's, available on Amazon. So you can get that. Jerry Wright with a W-R-I-G-H-T if you're not looking on YouTube. And Jerry, I want to talk about the book because there's a lot of buzz about this book. Mostly good, but there's a lot of advocates out there who are still strong MRP disciples. But let's start with you first. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. I started off in manufacturing in the Valley of the Sun, building turbine engines a long time ago. I know you've recently moved from Phoenix, but started off with Garrett Turbine Engine Company after I graduated from ASU. And then since that time, I've worked for, medical device companies, commercial giants, electronics industry. So I've kind of been across multiple industries and I've had a chance to see how MRP has been implemented or misimplemented, as well as seeing all the other side of what I'd call the non-MRP, which is pull and Kanban and those type of things. My background is actually engineering initially, and then I got into operations, got an MBA from University of Phoenix. So I guess I have a loyalty to the Valley of the Sun educational institutions. But I got my MBA while I was working, so I had a chance to actually see what the MBA meant from an actual business perspective, which I found incredibly valuable. I worked for a company called DJO Global, which is now, it's called Enovis, about a $3 billion medical device manufacturer. You see the knee braces on the football players, Mark, on college football and even in the pros now that they're wearing. That's the company that makes those, in addition to the fracture boots and wrist braces and all that.
Plus sure.
Artificial implants, hips, knees, and shoulders. I worked for them for about 16 years. And during that time, I had a chance to go into a business that we acquired. We acquired a lot of companies when I was there, about 15. And I'd turn off the MRP and put in pull and, watch the money start rolling in. And after doing this so many times, I said, someday I should probably write a book because everybody's doing it wrong. And I don't understand why we can't get everybody to come to the other side. So when I started my consultancy, I left Enovis, it was DJO Global back then, in 2013. So I've been doing it for about 11 years now, almost 12. And a lot of my focus has been helping companies get away from this insanity trap of, launching a forecast, building to the forecast, having it be wrong, and then having to redo it every week, which is kind of what I refer to that as in the insanity trap. I've liked to quote Einstein in the few areas that he had. So if you do the same thing over and over again, mm-hmm. and you expect different results, that's the true definition of insanity. And that's kind of where I got from the point of wanting to write the book is as part of the swan song of my career. So I really want to help all these poor, desperate people in the supply chains of the world's inventory managers get away from this challenge of constant expediting excess inventory and shortages, because it just doesn't work. But yet people keep pounding their heads against the wall and hoping it's going to get better. And I said, hey, there's an easier way. And I think many companies have found it, but sadly, Mark, it's not the majority. It's a minority that have found a way.
It is. That's by the way, that's my experience too, Jerry. Now,
to some place.
I don't believe you one bit when you say forecasts are wrong. Okay. I've never seen a forecast be wrong. Come on. I mean,
It's a guess of the future.
I had a client one time that the forecast balanced out in terms of almost exactly to the dollar. Okay. But there are so many puts and calls in the quantities from part number to part number. I said, well, from a financial perspective, congratulations. But you said you're going to sell this many of A's, you sold B's instead, and so forth. And the whole thing, from a forecast error perspective, probably about 80%, you know. So, but it's interesting. So, Jerry, I want to ask you now because a lot of confusion on MRP, what it stands for. I've heard, materials resource planning. I've heard manufacturing resource planning. A lot of different names. Are those one and the same name for the same thing?
I think they mean the same thing, but the strict definition is material requirements planning.
Requirements. That's right.
And
That's
it's
right.
and I think the thing that people have forgotten, it's material requirements planning, straightforward planning. There's no procurement. But what's happened is MRP has turned into from a plan of what we think we're going to build into, let's run the MRP, put the forecast in, and then that's what we're going to build. Now, if you're building to an order, which is kind of what the intention was back in the 1980s, let's say you're making steel case furniture or workstation furniture for a building, and you need to put 700 cubicles in it. Well, that's kind of how MRP was initially planned and designed. Say, let's take all the bill of materials, we'll blow through them all, we'll get all the purchase orders placed. And you need to do that for a highly complex workstation furniture environment with thousands of parts and thousands of cubicles. And I can understand where the computer advents and progresses were making sense. But then somebody said, hey, we should do that for our business. They go, yeah, but Mark, we're not a build to order company. We're a build to stock. He says, no problem. We'll just use the forecast. And that's where it all blew up. Because the forecast, and I've talked to so many people over the last 30 years, what is your forecast accuracy in general? And most people tell me about 70%. So some are lower, some are in the 50s. And I found one place, a guy, now this was an interesting anomaly, Mark. And by the way, his name was Mark. He actually did the planning for the surgical business that we were in. So hips, knees, shoulders, implants, castings, I mean, pretty complicated business. But
Right.
he did it himself based on history and looking at sales analysis and trends. And he talked to Mark and he said, well, tell me, is anything changing? And they go, no. And he actually got up to 85% accurate. And I thought that was amazing, but I've never seen anything better than that in a build to stock. And they were truly a build to stock environment, but it's because he did it himself and he used logic. And he actually at one point said, you know, this really isn't working. I want to go to Kanban. What do you think? You know, can we get better? And so he implemented Kanban and they went to like 99% fill rate as opposed to they were in the maybe low 90s, high 80s fill rate and constant shortages and way too much inventory. But when he switched, he goes, wow, we cut our inventory in half, which in that business was, I don't know, like $10 or $15 million less. That's a lot of inventory to cut
Yeah,
out.
it's a lot of, and I look at this and you mentioned materials, but also then this morphed into capacity planning and scheduling of your shop floor, which to me
Mass
is
production.
and well, in the lean world, you and I talk, but in the lean world, we call that a push system, right? Because I'm scheduling discrete operations. So if I'm running a particular machining center and I've got a bunch of work orders coming in from my MRP, there's no tie whatever as to what the next process is going to need. So you build inventory, it sits there. I could be producing in a sub-assembly cell product A. However, the final assembly is assembling product B. Now they're sitting there waiting for me to make B's. And now we're out of sync. That's where your inventory build comes. And that's why we call it a push system, because I made something that I did not get a signal for to make. It's as simple as that.
It's perplexing. One thing that we I had the fortune, someone like yourself that had been involved with Lean and knew about Toyota production systems and pull and those type of things.
Right.
Big fans of Danaher at the time. This is in the late 90s. And they said, "Hey, we shouldn't be pushing, we should be pulling." Like, okay, well, tell me about it, because I'm new into this inventory management thing in the late 90s. I'd worked for Kimberly-Clark, and Kimberly-Clark makes big tissue rolls that turn into Kleenex facial tissue or Hydra paper towels or Scott paper towels. And so we were just constantly making as much as we possibly could, and we had a 1 million square foot warehouse, and it
Wow.
was not a pull system whatsoever. It was all push, because they wanted to keep the tissue machines running and highly optimized. But when I got into the medical device field, they kind of said, "No, I think we want to go in this direction. We're going to do cellular manufacturing. We're going to do pull systems. We're going to set up Kanban." And I go, "Wow, that's cool." And my experience at DJO at the time is they'd run the MRP. Nobody called it material requirements plan; just called it MRP. That was
Sure.
the three-letter word you referred to at the beginning. And they'd run the MRP, and they would print out this green bar stack. So this is like 1990s green bar stack, the green and white paper. And they would sit down as a production team and start reviewing it. Okay, we ran the MRP. What are we going to build this week? And how many people do we have? And after they got to about the 10th or 11th page, he said, "All right, that's not going to work. Can you rerun the MRP?" Well, she said, "No, I can't rerun it until next Sunday, but I'll definitely rerun it." And they said, "Okay, we're going to build what we know we can build." And then they'd start building. And I saw this happening over and over, month after month. And I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. And so we hired someone who had a background similar to yourself. And he said, No, we're going to set up Kanban." And they said, "Well, no, we spent $1 million on our, I think it was BPICS back at the time, business planning
Oh, I
office."
remember BPEX. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And we got to run MRP. We had nine people running and expediting and managing and pushing and doing everything with MRP. And the fellow said, "Hey, we're not going to do this. We're gonna unplug MRP." And he said, "But don't tell everyone else, because they'll lose their minds. We got to set up our Kanban system first, and then we'll unplug the MRP. In the meantime, we'll just manage as best as we can." At that time, Mark, I was writing a lot of deep forecast problem. We didn't have that screwed because we used too many, something like that. And the good news is, we got the Kanban set up. It was over about 6,000 parts, so it took us about 6 months to get it all set up. And then we actually stopped using the MRP, and everybody lost their minds. We said, "Hey, we're so bad right now, 40 or 50 part shortages every day, excess inventory, outside warehousing. We got to make this change." And so we did. And within 6 months, our back orders went from 40 or 50 a day to one or two a day. We cut our inventory almost in half. We got out of the outside warehousing. And our fulfillment rate went from the mid-80s up to like 96%. And everybody kind of goes, "I don't know what you're doing, but that was a good idea." Because everybody thought that three-letter word was, gospel. You couldn't get away from it. You had to do the MRP and the MPS, and you had to do it this way because that's what they had all experienced for the last 15 or 20 years. And it's
You know,
just
Jerry,
insanity.
I've seen a lot of what you've seen in, excuse me, in many cases, people show up to work and they don't really know what their job is. They don't have a purpose. So I see a lot of this. I see people showing up just expecting to walk into the company and start doing what you just described, expediting, looking for abnormalities and just handling deviations. And that becomes their job. All that stuff, all that chaos becomes, well, I'm gonna use your book, insanity, okay? But they never challenge the framework in which they're working or the purpose of what they're supposed to do. So they just show up and wait for that next problem that hit them in the upside the head, and they're expediting like crazy, and you get calls from the CEO, make that order first, you end up upsetting somebody else, and you got all this going on, and people make full-time institutionalized careers out of handling this chaos that you're writing about, okay? Which, by the way, very well done too, if you, and I really highly recommend this book, especially if you're on MRP, okay? And if you think that is the Holy Grail, then I would ask you, when was the last time you had an accurate forecast? What's your on-time delivery? Two, request date, not the promise date. I have an episode on this podcast on that. What's your inventory looking like? Has that really improved over the course of time? All these things you can look at. How many irate calls you get per day from your customers? all this stuff, right? And when I hear these stories from you and from others as well, it's just mind-boggling that today, and this is now 2025. What'd you say, 1964? Okay.
1964, yes, sir.
Okay, so I mean, John F. Kennedy was not even 1 year gone. He got shot in November of 63, I believe. And that's how far this is, okay? Over half a century, and we're still screwing around with this, which to your point, there's better ways. And I'm not saying combine and pull manufacturing is not e is easy, but it's a heck of, you put a lot of work into it as well, but the work you put into it has a real payback at the end, where this insanity trap of MRP is just crazy. You know, I'll tell you, I don't know if I told you the story, Jerry, or not, but one of my clients had this great lean audit, which I'm against lean audits, but they said, Mark, we want you to go to our worst plant and our best plant, and you'll see the difference. And then the best plant got their gold award, the top award, and the other plant didn't even qualify for even bronze. Okay, so here I'm thinking, I think we're in the Olympics here, right? And so I went to both plants. First, I didn't see no discernible difference between the two, but in the gold plant, the one that had the top rating, there was a guy there that ran their MRP system. Okay. So right there, as you probably would guess, they shouldn't be gold. Okay. Okay. Well, let's forget that for a minute. He was so proud about the MRP system, and that's all he talked about. And he was so proud of how the MRP was working and how great it was. And when you look at the performance numbers, they were lethargic. But in his mind, his MRP system was running exactly the way he wanted it to run. And I'm sure he put a lot of work into it, and I'm sure he worked really hard at it. There's no question in my mind he worked hard at it, but to what end, right? So, and this is a company that's been doing lean for, when I started working with them, it's a multi-billion dollar company. They were doing lean, Jerry, oh, I'd say a good 5 or 6 years. And it never dawned on them. So the companies out there today that are trying to do lean, that are still using traditional MRP scheduling and procurement, get this book. Please get this book and read it and understand that this is insanity. You cannot do both. You cannot. It's like if you're a baseball player, and maybe our foreign friends who are going to listen to this won't get this, but Nolan Ryan was one of the best pitchers in baseball history. I think he was the best ever. And it's like you standing there with a plastic wiffle ball bat trying to bat against him. Even if you make contact, you're striking out. Okay,
It's
and
over.
so as this 95 mile an hour fastball or 100 mile an hour fastball comes down the pike, so you have no chance. You have no chance of succeeding if this is what you're doing with it. Now there are some uses for MRP,
Oh, absolutely.
and you talked a little bit about that, but not to the degree we're talking about with scheduling and just relying on the fact that the forecast is right and all that. So talk a little bit about what it could be used for, because I have used, I'm APEX certified, by the way, and I have used MRP to do certain things that are helpful, okay, but not to do the things it was intended to do in terms of scheduling and all that. But talk a little bit about what you could use it for if you had it.
Sure. So as we mentioned before, 1964, they came up with MRP. Well, in 1983, Oliver White, so not Wright, but Oliver White,
White, yeah, Ollie White, yep.
came up with MRP2, which integrated the whole idea of forecasting, planning, capacity, and all that type of
Right.
thing. And as I mentioned before, of like the workstation furniture company, if you're building to a specific order and your bills of materials are reasonably accurate, you're building to an order. That's not a guess of what you're building. You know what you're building. If you know your scrap rates and so forth, MRP does the calculations and gives you, okay, this is how many you need to buy to build this order. That's where it's best intended to be used because you're building to a specific order. But if you're building to a guess, like building to stock, what you insert the forecast for the order, and we know that's not going to be correct because you can't predict the future. And everybody says, oh, well, we have AI and that's going to help. And I go, AI
Oh boy.
still can't predict the future. I mean, nobody can. If we could, we'd have billionaires everywhere and amazing miracles and so forth. But I don't think anybody's invented a crystal ball that works yet. And as I mentioned before, 85% top end, low end, 50% accurate. So what I typically do, Mark, with a client, and I did this when I was with DJO Global working with new companies, is so tell me about the business. Do you have outside warehousing? Yeah, we got a lot of stuff that we've built that we don't know what to do with. It's okay. Do you have back orders or shortages on a frequent basis? Oh yeah, we have 4, 5, 10, 15, 20 a day. I'm like, okay. Do you do a lot of expediting? Yeah, we do a lot of expediting. I say, well, how do you know what to build? Well, we run the MRP. Okay. And I say, okay, well, let's talk about maybe doing a better three-letter word on a pilot area called DNS, do not schedule. Meaning you go into MRP, and I had to do this with a lot of companies. There's a function in MRP you can put called DNS, do not schedule. So you take it off MRP and said, let's just do it on this one line. And I usually pick the high volume, complicated line, but we could adapt it to Kanban or pull really quickly. And one company in Tennessee, we were making those little cold packs that you use to put on your, they have like a bentonite material and mineral oil inside. You throw them in the freezer, then you put them on your arm or whatever else.
Unfortunately, I do know what they are.
Exactly. So we started a pull line in this. We turned everything into do not schedule for that line, and we set it up in Kanban. There was maybe 30 SKUs, finished goods, and raw material wise, maybe another 50. Put it all in Kanban, went through the whole group, talked about receiving, talked to all the suppliers, set it up. It took about maybe 3 months, set it up, and then they had back orders and excess inventory and all that. And we bled through things and we wrote some stuff off and got rid of it. And then we looked at the before and the after 6 months later. And they go, well, yeah, we got 99.9% fill rate there. We have exactly the inventory we need and we have almost no problems. I go, so do you guys like this? They go, yeah, we really like it. Do you want to do it elsewhere? Yeah, we want to do it elsewhere. But before they were going, oh no, man, we got to do the MRP thing. And that's, you know, how our accounting works, absorption-based cost accounting, and a whole nother topic we could take on. But I said, we got to get away from this, but you guys aren't going to believe me till you see it. Everybody's from Missouri. Show me. So I said, let's just do a pilot and try it. And then when they do the pilot, they go, how did we ever run before that way? And it's just amazing the transformations that I've seen. And I'm thinking, well, the buyer planner used to be pulling his hair out. He'd work from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., Monday through Friday, take work home on the weekends to manage shortages, because he wasn't just managing the cold pack line. He had all kinds of lines. And it was just nightmarish. And afterwards, he goes, man, it's just so easy now. Actually, the suppliers helped me manage my inventory. I don't have to do much anymore. I just handle the issues and place blanket purchase orders 2 times a year. I go, so is that, are you comfortable? He goes, well, I'm not as busy as I used to be. So what are you doing? Oh, well, I'm actually playing softball in the evenings on a team now because I get off work at 4:30 instead of 7. And I kind of have seen this on a regular basis, Mark, where these people who are just, you know, banging their heads against the wall, pulling their hair out, being very frustrated and not happy with their jobs, are suddenly going, well, I love my job. You know what I do now? I work on cost savings projects and negotiations, and I'm sharpening my skills. I'm actually thinking about getting a master's degree because I'm not working 70 hours a week. And so when I wrote the book, as we talked about before, I didn't do so from a standpoint of, hey, I want to make a lot of money selling books. I wanted to do it for the benefit of the people out there that are banging their heads against the wall that, hey, there's a better way. And if you can convince your company leadership to try something, try it. And I even talk about that in the books. I want people to have a life and feel like they're contributing as opposed to just fighting fires all the time.
Jerry, it's one of the things that attracted me to the book. First of all, it's a topic that unfortunately is still relevant. Like if you and I were having this conversation back in the early 90s, I can maybe understand a little bit. Here we are so many years later. But what I liked about your book also is so many people write books and they describe the problem, but they don't talk about what to do about it. And your book does both. And that's what I really do like it. And I think your notion, if I heard you say that you start with a pilot, right? You don't try to do the whole elephant at the same time
Correct.
and get some people to see it and then get them to believe in it. And then you do what the Japanese call Yokuten, which is spread best practices, right? Throughout the company. And that's the right way, I think, to go about it because there's a lot of naysayers out there, and it's hard to change old ways. I mean, these are people schooled in this. They taught it in business school. Matter of fact, when I took my APEX exam, way back when for my CPIM, I was answering questions, Jerry, because I now had some experience with lean, right? When I got the certification, I was
Right.
answering questions on that exam that I knew were wrong. Okay. But I
Okay.
knew what they wanted, and it
Yeah.
all pretty much tied back to this, back to MRP and what they were expecting you to say relative to this, where, I knew what the right answers were, but it was nowhere to be found on the test. So that was an interesting crossover when I took that exam,
Yeah.
The other thing too is you mentioned just getting off track a little bit here, but you mentioned blanket orders. So if people that are out there not listening, instead of creating a purchase order every time you order parts from a company and have all that minutia, all that waste, you create a blanket order that goes over anywhere 6 months, maybe sometimes to a year. And you might take a forecast plus or minus, and you commit a certain amount of volume to a supplier. It's one purchase order, and then you pull off of that based on your Kanban signals, okay? So your Kanban signals will go to the supplier, say, hey, I need 50 more, and that's all calculated in your orchestration of Kanban, which we won't get into today. But talking about blanket orders, you take a lot of waste just by not doing things as much. In this case, writing purchase orders. One of the other reasons we used the MRP system is with the bill of materials. And again, I'm going to not assume everybody knows what a bill of material is. So, think about a cake recipe where it says I need 2 eggs, cup of milk, sugar, flour, blah blah blah. That's the ingredients to make a cake. A car might have I need 4 tires, I need an engine, I need an engine block, I need springs, I need this, I need that. All the materials listed. Usually rolled up into a subcomponent level. And so when you have all those materials and you know you're going to make 5 Toyotas, well, you can blow that out and see what the individual parts are. That's what the bill of material does for you. So we used it, Jerry, to backflush. Okay. So we backflushed inventory. When I was the CFO of Jake Brake, I created the backflush system where our inventories were so low because we were doing what you said, okay,
Right.
in terms of getting away from the MRP. And we had two inventory transactions, one when we received it and one when we shipped the finished product and everything backflushed in between. And I remember I got out of taking physical inventory from our auditors twice in a row because it was so low. And they said, well, Mark, if you don't have a perpetual inventory record, how do you know what you got? I said, easy.
Go
You
can.
go down and look at it.
Well,
It's a
they used to
specific spot.
swear. Yeah,
Yeah.
they didn't like black hole whip, as it was referred to, right? Because you have your receipt, you have your issue to the floor, if you even have that, and then you have your transaction of finished goods.
All the
Anything that's out
transactions in
in
the
the
middle,
process,
yeah,
yeah,
added no value.
well, but why are you doing them? They're just complete waste. They provide no benefit to the customer. Where we got into the blanket purchase order was early on in the Kanban system. We actually worked with the supplier. At one time, we had 45 different suppliers for rivets, screws, washers, nuts, bolts, things we used
Wow.
in brace assembly. And we got one supplier. They were Western Fasteners, great, great group. They said, "Hey, look, we'll buy anything we don't already carry. We won't do markups, and we'll just take care of managing your inventory for you." They said, "Great, we'll give you a quarterly blanket purchase order for, hundreds of thousands of dollars because we use a lot of this material." But the guy would come on site 2 or 3 days a week, fill everything up, let us know if something was short or off, and just the accounting load alone of invoicing, three-way matching, all the other things that happen with all those different purchase orders and all those invoices, it all went away. They got a weekly or a monthly, invoice and a payment. And once a quarter, they'd assign another blanket purchase order. And the amount of reduction of wasted energy was incredible. And that was just one supplier across 45, different part numbers. Well, then we started looking at what could we do that for everything else. And pretty soon we're finding out as the company's growing, and we were a very fast-growing company through acquisition, our costs were actually dropping because we made it easier, and the existing 10 people, let's say in accounting, were used to be managing a $100 million business. Now they're managing a $300 million business, and it's actually easier.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was the ideal situation for us. We were growing, and we could absorb all the, efforts and issues, but we didn't really have to let anybody go. And we kept growing, and yet we didn't have to hire a bunch of people because we kept taking the waste out of the process.
It's
Very similar to
incredible.
what I'm sure you
Yeah.
experienced at Danaher and Jake Brake. It's like, make it
Yeah.
easy, and then you can just make profit.
It's incredible. Now, Jerry, you recently posted, and I also promoted your book on LinkedIn, but you posted your book, and you received over 30,000 views on your book. So first of all, there's a lot of interest out there, okay,
Yeah, for sure.
in what you wrote about. Now, talk to me about, they weren't all favorable, were they? They weren't all like, hey, I agree with you. They probably, my guess would be, and I didn't do the math on it, two-thirds, if not more, maybe 75% were favorable, but you had a lot of naysayers out there saying that you're wrong, and this is the wrong way to think about things. Tell me a little about some of those comments, if you don't mind. What were some of those that
Sure.
stuck out in your mind about where people are stuck on this?
Yeah, so I did get a fair amount of positive comments, totally agree with you, but these are people who've seen the other side. What I
Sure.
did get is a fairly large number and very vocal folks who said, "Hey, no, you're misleading everyone. MRP works exactly correctly, and it's really good, and I've implemented it many times, and it works fine." And I'm thinking, okay, well, I've never seen it, unless it's in a make-to-order situation, be useful and help. So I started getting back to these different people. So, well, can you send me an example of where you've seen it work really well? Because I'd love to talk to the company. Oh, no, I can't share my sources. I'm like, well, I'd like just one example. I'm not looking for dozens, just one where you can tell me it worked really, really well. And I get, people saying, well, back in 1993, there was this. And I go, okay, how about something current state in a build to stock orientation? And every time I'd get back with people, they'd come back and they'd say, well, this, and there was a divergence. And they said, what are you talking about? And they asked for really, really complicated answers and very detailed. Like I'd run out of space in the responses and they'd have to do multiple replies. And it was rather perplexing. But what I think I've seen is that many people make their livelihood off of selling software and selling services to support MRP. And if you're struggling, like many companies are, well, we need to get an upgrade. We need a better algorithm for our forecasting module. So, and I've heard all kinds of different forecasting modules out there said, if we just spend another $1 million, we'll get a much better forecast accuracy. And I think that's where the money is, Mark. It's driving people to continue to support a broken or flawed system, because in a build to stock environment, the forecast is worthless. It's
By the way,
pushing
there's
what
that
it's doing.
same incentive for consultants to write books that don't give you the what to do about it part. Okay, because there's a self, it's an industry they've created that get a lot of people shaking their head saying, oh, yeah, I agree with you, I agree with you, I agree with you. But these consultants offer, in academics in particular, no hands-on tacit knowledge about how to counteract the GAN. My friend Colleen Sepulveda learned the word GAN in when she worked for Toyota. It means cancer in Japanese.
Yeah,
But the GAN
that's
that
right.
is out there today in all, and to me, the MRP is one big GAN trap. it's insanity, but it's a GAN trap because it provides a lot of livelihood, and all that, but it also is, I don't know how you can enjoy your job by coming in and fighting these fires that this MRP creates on a daily basis. I just don't
Yeah,
understand. I mean, to
exactly.
me, it's almost,
You mentioned.
you can almost argue that MRP is a fuel for anti-RFP, respect for people. Okay, to expect people to work in the insanity that this creates. I'm going to keep go back to your word called insanity. That's the thing to me that is just not good for your associates, for your customer, and for your bottom line.
Yeah, exactly. You'd mentioned earlier, Mark, APICS, as soon as the Association or American Productivity and Inventory
American
Control.
Production Inventory Control Society. Yeah, APICS.
So
Yeah.
it's gone now. It's been replaced by the Association for Supply Chain Management.
Right.
And if you remember back in the APICS days, maybe when you were taking your test, CPIM, Certified Production and Inventory Manager, was a
That's
big
me.
certification out
Yep.
there. And that was in the heart and the lifeblood and the push for MRP in schools and businesses and everything. The 80s and 90s were that expansion and growth of MRP that, really kind of got popularized early 80s by Oliver White. And it's interesting that the Association for Supply Chain Management changed their names because we're really not about productivity inventory control anymore. We're all about supply chain. And that was
That's
kind
right.
of the difference. And ASCM is a big society, maybe 30,000 members or more. It's big. At one time, APICS had over 100,000
Yeah.
members. It was huge. But what I saw happening with APICS, and this was part of the reason AME, the Association for Manufacturing Excellence, departed. So some guys, I don't know if you know Robert Hall, Doc Hall,
Sure
any
do.
guys who were part of AME, they got away from APICS because he said, we don't buy into MRP. We want to do pull and Kanban. And they called it stockless production back then. I don't know if you remember that. And they said, we want to do this stuff because we think this makes sense. And Doc Hall, as well as Patricia Moody and one other gentleman, wrote a book called The Kaizen Blitz. And it was
Yep.
all about kind of getting away from this MRP mindset and going to pull and thinking much more from a Kaizen and a, I'd say like a Kanban philosophy, a pull-based philosophy versus this pushing through MRP. And when they did that, they really broke off and said, hey, no, we're going to be different. And, hey, nice working with you guys. We're going to do our own thing and form our own society. And yet they were still pretty small. And even to this day, I'd say the excellence in manufacturing, the pull folks, is still the majority or the minority compared to the push and the MRP crowd that's out there. Like I estimate, based on what I've seen, about 85% still MRP push, and only about 15% is, pull, Kanban, and that kind of thing. That's a pretty big variation. And then I said, well, why? There's got to be a reason why. And then I said, well, what do you do in all situations where you want to find the root cause? You follow the money. And when I went out and looked at it, the software sales, so ERP systems, MRP systems, forecasting things and stuff, by this time next year, Mark, will be 76 billion with a B
Crazy,
in
crazy.
sales. And so people want to sell you services. They want to sell you software. They don't want to sell you a solution that's going to, disrupt their pocketbook. So when I wrote the book, I was thinking, oh, how many people am I going to be making happy that are excited to try this? And how many people are going to say, no, that's bunk. It's gone, as he just indicated. Don't listen to him. He doesn't know what he's talking about, because then they can't sell the insidious lie, the insanity trap to keep it going. And I think that's where
Yep.
it comes from, to be honest.
Well, think about it, Jerry. Let's say you're a production control manager, right? And you've got all this under your jurisdiction. In order for you to break away from this, you've got to, it's an act of Congress in a lot of companies, especially when your leadership is not enlightened. Okay. And they don't. Now, lucky for me, when I personally turned the MRP off at Danaher, as far as it went for scheduling. Matter of fact, one of the complaints of one of the production control people who we, replaced elsewhere in the company, she said to me, "Mark, all of our routings are in there. How are we gonna?" I said, "Our routings are the cell. It goes from machine one to two to three to four to five. We have no departments anymore. We have no warehouses that stuff going into stock and back out again. It goes from machine one, and in one piece flow fashion with standard work and all that and pull." It goes flow manufacturing, it goes to machine two, then it goes to three, then it goes to test, then it goes to, and I said, that's our routings are visible on the shop floor. You just go out and look at the way the machines are organized. Okay. But I look at these, I had one client, it's a multi-billion dollar client, and they were going to spend over $100 million on an ERP system. Okay. Oh yeah. And, one of the big ones, I won't mention it, but he was telling me about all the benefits they were going to get from buying this ERP system. And I'm listening to the CFO. I used to be a CFO. And I'm thinking, okay, even if you got those benefits, which you're not going to get, you're going to end up creating five more problems. Okay. But I, right in front of a CEO, I said to him, let's just call him John. I said, John, I tell you what, if you're going to get that kind of benefit, you should buy two.
Yeah.
Okay. Matter of fact, buy three. Okay. Well, I'll tell you a funny story. When I got my, so when I got my CPIM, my APEX certification, the reason I got it was for this. Now, I was pushing back on you know, I came out of cost accounting, right? And I had a fair sense of what MRP was and all that. Yeah, I learned more about it when I got my CPIM, but I had this guy who was a big, he taught APEX courses. He was a fellow. He was really big in the society. Taught at night, taught all these people all this stuff that you're writing against. And his name was Jim. And I said, I'll tell you what, Jim. He says to me one day, you're an accountant. You know nothing about MRP. I'm APEX certified, blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, I'm gonna go get that damn certificate. So I got my certificate, right? And this is a true story. It took a year because you're going to take certain part of the test, certain part of the year. So it took me a year to get it. Okay. I finally got my certificate in the mail. I called them up to my office and I took my certificate and pounded it on the table and says, Jim, there's my APEX certification right there. Now let's talk. He goes, Mark, I got something to tell you. I go, what's that? I just gave my 2 weeks' notice. I go, you son of a.
Oh boy,
But
that's funny.
anyway, you know, that's that. So a lot of pushback, people still not there. But again, you know, trying to get enlightened leadership. I had George Koenigsaker, I had Art Byrne, I had Bob Pellin. We're all in concert. Matter of fact, they allowed me to invent now what we call lean accounting. You mentioned absorption stuff earlier and all the other stuff that is goes right along with this insanity, right? And I had enlightened leadership that allowed me to do this stuff. Okay. And not everybody's in that camp. And a lot of these leaders don't want to take risks. You know, they don't want to take risks. Like, what if it doesn't work? And the crazy thing about it is we have so many benchmark studies now. Again, this is not 1980. Okay. This is 2025. So many benchmark studies out there. It's absolutely a shame that this book had to be written.
Yeah,
I mean,
I wish I didn't have to, but
I'm glad you did it, okay? Because it's still needed, but it's a shame that it's needed. I guess maybe it's a better way to say it, right?
Well, and it's funny you mentioned the accounting side because I've had the fortune of having people like George Koenigsaker and others that were very supportive. I had Ken Rolfes and Luke Falstick at our company, longtime AAME members and proponents of lean and all that kind of thing. But we had Gene Cunningham and Ori Fumi come out and talk to us about
Know them
how to
both.
do, here's how you do plain English financial statements and real numbers accounting and get away from absorption-based cost accounting. And we had that luxury of at least very senior leadership saying, we're going to try different things. We're going to do things differently. We had Mike Rother come out and talk to us about how to do Toyota Kata in person. So it was Mike. It wasn't, one of Mike's disciples, which are all very good folks as well, but said, this is how we're going to do it. And we had some of the best people come show us how to do it and how to be better. And suddenly we took this little tiny $100 million bracing company and turned it into a $1 billion medical device company. And did it all doing 100% lean culture. We turned off the MRP and the experience that you get from that, like you saw at Danaher and Jake Brake and places like that, it's irreplaceable, but it gives you an arsenal to address the naysayers. The sad thing is that there's just so many naysayers, Mark. I mean, they say,
Yeah,
no, it
I
doesn't
know.
work. That's we're different. We're different. I go, really? You're different? You have people, you have materials, you have processes, you have accounting, you have procedures. We have those. Well, okay, so tell me how you're different. Well, we make this. I go, so it doesn't matter. It
Well, you
works
know, my
everywhere.
response, Jerry, when they tell me they're different is I'll agree with them. Yeah, look at your numbers and look at somebody like Danaher or some of the companies you work with. You aren't different. Just look at your numbers. Producing on-time delivery to 70%, your EBITDA is, you know, in single digits. Your quality is X. Yeah, you are different. I agree 100%. You're different. Okay.
And
And it's not good.
it's not a good different, though. It's not a
Okay.
good different.
Well, it's funny because, so when Art Byrne went to Wirewild after he left Danaher,
Yeah.
Ori Fumi was Art's CFO, and Art had him call me to look at our lean. Again, we didn't call it lean accounting back then. That's
Right, right.
that name got tagged on later. But Ori came and looked at what we did and what I did at JBreak. And basically, what I did was throw out all the standard costing, all the variance analysis, all those things. Purchase price variance was just incentivize purchasing guys to buy the least quality, lowest price,
Yeah,
and
kind of.
in mass volume, okay, which is something that a lot of people don't understand. What purchase price variance is, that when you ask a supplier to, give you 6 months' supply of part A, but you're also procuring part B, you stole capacity from part B from that supplier. So now that supplier, now you say, hey, we don't have any part Bs, we can't ship. That's because they're not lean and they're producing in batch and want to
Yeah.
get you that big shot of part A where they're stealing capacity from part B. And that's the hidden cost of a lot of people don't recognize. But Ori actually called me and kind of benchmarked us and then went back to Wirewild and did his thing with that. And then Gene actually worked for Lantech. The guy that ran that was Ron Hicks, who
Yeah.
worked at Hennessy, one of our divisions at Danaher. And when
Yeah.
he left Danaher, he somehow got religion at Lantech, and Gene was his finance person. So that's how all that kind of came together.
Yeah.
By the way, we just lost Brian Maskell. I don't know if you know Brian,
I
but
didn't know Brian passed away. I did know Brian, sure.
Brian passed away. He was a great guy. It was and Jerry Solomon. So the five of us, Jerry Solomon, Gene Cunningham, Uri, Brian, and me, were known by in the Lean Accounting Summit with Jim Hunsinger as the Fab Five.
Yeah, I know
Remember?
Jim too, sure.
And remember the I helped Jim write his. I contributed to his thesis on
All
lean
right.
accounting when he got his MBA. And that was years
Great
ago when I
career.
was still Jake Break. But the thing is, the history is interesting, but it's just hard to get people to move that needle. And so I hope this book really does, in fact, wake up some people out there to start moving forward. And I appreciate the fact as to the reason why you wrote this book, because I'm in the same vein. I just want to leave a legacy of helping people. And the one advantage I have, and maybe you did too, is there weren't a lot of consultants out there to screw us up.
No, we didn't have, we
Okay,
didn't,
not
we had a
I don't know
few
where to
early
go
on and
today.
then none. Yeah, we
Yeah.
became consultants ourselves.
I mean, every consultant out there is coming up with a new package, a new buzzword, and you'll see me on LinkedIn. I think you saw me. Just do the basics. No silver bullet, nothing fancy. I'm not going to package stuff with new names that already exist to make it look like I invented it, okay? And so many consultants out there are really ruining the industry and confusing the heck out of the people who are trying to learn. So this book should stand out, but it's now in the sea of a lot of other what I would call TLAs, three-letter acronyms, okay? I have a TLA for a TLA. And
Yeah,
now, but I
exactly.
and why I want you on this podcast, and I'm going to help you promote this, is that this is something everybody should be looking at if you are, in fact, running your business with an MRP, because you will never, ever transform your company if you don't do what's in this book. Transform with lean, I should say, if you don't
Yeah.
do what's in this book. And that's why this book is so vital for anybody that's out there trying to do this. So,
Mark, I really appreciate your consideration as well as your thoughts. I know you're a big thought leader, not only from the Jake Break days and the Danaher Business System, but just on LinkedIn as well as your knowledge through Lean Horizons. It's evident you've been there and you've seen it. And so when you are supportive and say, hey, this is a good book, you should read it, I think all of your followers are going to go, oh, I should probably read that because Mark doesn't recommend a lot of stuff.
I don't. By the way, you just called me old and you just called me somebody who made a lot of
Looking.
mistakes.
I think it was good looking, wasn't
And by the way, you're right on both counts. Okay, I made a lot of mistakes and I'm old. And I hope to get older. But Jerry,
Me
final
too.
words. Any final thoughts on this before we close out?
No, I think the biggest thing is, one, I appreciate you having me on, and two, I'd really like to see people read the book and benefit from a chance of making their lives better. Because this is for all the people managing inventory, handling their supply chains. It's not for necessarily people in accounting, although there are things that could be learned. It's really for people dealing with those headaches every day that I'd love to see go away. And I mentioned in the final chapters of the book is if you can't make it happen at your company, find a company that's willing to do it and improve your
Yeah,
quality of
exactly.
life, because that's what we need to see. The quality of life of everybody in this business needs to go up. There's no reason to bang our heads against the wall and waste money. It's just very wasteful.
Jerry, on a higher level, to me, this book's about respect for people at a very high level, right?
Agreed.
And so I'm looking at the cover, and we're going to show the cover again on this on the YouTube video if you're not looking at it, but you got a guy that's pulling his hair out almost. He's going crazy. Yeah, there you go. There you go. And Jerry, we're gonna get this out, start promoting on LinkedIn. And I'll be recommending it also to my clients as well. So hopefully people will start looking at this and start questioning what it is they're doing with this supposed silver bullet that never really became that, right? So
Definitely.
okay, Jerry Wright. By the way, Amazon.com. You can get this. Now, do you have a website, Jerry?
Yes, Lean Rights, so LEANWRIGHT.com. You can get a link to the book there.
And is that your consulting
That's
address?
my consulting business. Yeah, Lean
And
Rights.
is it leanrights.com?
Yeah, LeanRight.com.
Okay, so go check him out, and I'd bring him in. I'd get him in there to start looking at what it is you guys can do if you want to try to get out of this insanity trap, okay, and definitely get this book. So Jerry, let's stay in touch and keep me posted as to how it's going, and we'll take it from there, and we'll close out. So this was episode 52. Not that anybody's keeping track out there, but sometimes I refer back to an episode number, and I have a feeling in the future I'll be referring back to episode 52 quite a bit. So
Thank you, Mike.
Jerry, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. And we'll catch you around on LinkedIn.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.